in Virginia, we see a lot of animal violence transcending to human violence. And what I wanted to ask you, and if you guys heard this lecture, I apologize, and we'll try to make it more interesting for you. Which serial killer brought the kids to his backyard and showed them the animal heads on the pipes? And if you've heard this speech before, like Kyle, you cannot answer that. Just big old guess. Any serial killer will do.
Ed Gein.
No. What? No?
Son of Sam?
Someone did say it? Jeffrey Dahmer. Who said that? All right, there you go. Jeffrey Dahmer's dad thought he was going to be a doctor, and he allowed his son to carve up animals in their garage. He went on to be, as you know, one of the most notorious serial killers ever. And so what I try to get people to understand is, how many of you have pets? All right, yay. Okay? I don't care if you have pets, but what I do care about is for you to care about it for the human factor, because there is a human factor. And what we know is when kids, or especially kids, when they are desensitized by hurting animals, they move on to humans. I was at a prosecutor's conference in LA, and I was talking to some people, and they were asking me about juveniles. And they have a juvenile who basically were swinging cats by their tails and hitting them against the wall, okay? That is against the law in Virginia. It's against the law in most states. But when you have a juvenile doing that, you really have to get a hold of them, because you have to make sure that you give them the mental health counseling that they need. And in the juvenile system, we don't usually punish juveniles. We try to divert them and try to get them on a different path. And so in that case, we were talking about how they really need to get mental health counseling for those juveniles. In the adult system, judges are often don't want to give mental health counseling. And it's one of those things as prosecutors, especially across the nation, that we really want to have continue in the system, because what we know is they do need mental health counseling. Hoarders, anybody have a crazy cat lady in your background? Well, you know, aunts. You don't have to tell me if you are a crazy cat lady. What we know is hoarders are usually middle class, very educated women. Sorry, girls. And for whatever reason, they don't think anyone else can save that animal. How many of you have someone in your lives that they have to save every animal they see? Okay, doesn't make them a bad person, it makes them a great person, right? But when they can't let go and they keep bringing animals into their homes and they can't see that the feces is outweighing them in their homes, that's a problem. So I'm going to be showing you some pictures, and hopefully they won't be so graphic that they will make you freak out, but there you go. We also know in the high school shootings, and I think the last 6 out of 8 high school shootings we've had, they've started out on animals before they went and shot up the school. There's one very famous school shooting, and they basically had target practice with dogs before they shot up the school. Anybody know the name of that school?
Columbine.
Yes, Columbine, right? And the other thing we know, and I think when Dr. Clifton gets here, he'll talk about this, is there's a definite link between domestic violence and animal violence. We had a case in Virginia where the person basically locked a little toy breed, it was a chihuahua, in the basement because his wife, who he had been beating, had left him. He locked her in the basement and he starved her to death. And once I'm done, hopefully you'll understand kind of the barriers to that prosecution as a felony. All right, so let's get right into Virginia law, my favorite subject. All right, in Virginia, we divide animal cruelty into two kinds of cruelty. We have what I call intentional cruelty. Jeffrey Dahmer, the school shooters, you know what you got, setting a kitten on fire, setting a dog on fire. And then we have the deprivation clause, which I call the catch-all provision, and that's number two. Under little I, it's anything that's pretty much willful. or intentional. Although, in Virginia, when you get to felonies, if I can prove willfully inflicting inhumane injury, even on a starvation case, we have done that in Virginia. But under I, under A, it's usually an intentional conduct. Okay, someone who is in Baltimore, they have a real problem with their youth setting little pit bulls on fire, pit bull puppies. They have a really huge problem with that. And under I, you would be prosecuted in Virginia. If the dog lives, I only have a misdemeanor. And then two is depriving any animal of necessary food, drink, shelter, or emergency veterinary treatment. Drink and shelter and food, pretty much a no-brainer, right? You don't feed your dog. I will tell you, every deprivation case I've ever had, they've said, I fed him this morning. And then I put on a necropsy, and a vet to talk about the necropsy. Anybody know what a necropsy is? Autopsy for animals, right? So I put on my vet, and she says, well, the bone marrow fat was 1.8%. Do you know how long it takes for an animal to metabolize its bone marrow fat? Weeks. So there's no way that someone was fed, that dog was fed the morning of, because they're metabolizing everything in their body. If you stop eating, or someone starts starving you, not you in particular, you start metabolizing your organs, all your skin, everything, and of course I could use this to metabolize, but you metabolize everything. And then the last thing you metabolize is your bone marrow. And that's, you break your femur, and it should be pink, and it's white, because you metabolize everything. In the last case I did in Halifax, the dog had been starved to 1.8% of its bone marrow fat. Your bone marrow fat is 10%. So it's a very awful death. And I used to say to people, you know, of course I don't like the person who's burned a puppy. But when you burn a puppy, I know who you are. You know, you're pretty much evil in my book. Okay? Right? You too, right? But the deprivation stuff is a lot worse, because it's people who, it's inexplicable. I had one lady who starved the pit bull on the end of a chain and fed the Rottweiler inside her house. Any of you guys taken child abuse or child law or anything to do with, we have prosecutors here who've done a lot of juvenile law. But, you know, child abuse is like that too. They'll starve one child, they'll do something with one child, and they'll, the other child will leave alone. And we find that in animal abuse. So we have these similarities to human crime and animal crime. So, deprivation clause, emergency veterinary treatment, kind of the little, what I like to tell you is anything, if that dog is suffering, then I can prosecute you under this clause. Okay? There's a lot more, and I'll get to it in a minute. But basically, if I have a vet who can get on the stand and say that dog has suffered, then I can prove it under A. Anything in A is class 1 misdemeanor. Does anybody know what a class 1 misdemeanor is? Besides the prosecutors. Anybody? Up to 12 months in jail. That's all I got, okay? And as my prosecutors will tell you, it's really hard to, and my animal control officers will tell you, it's hard to get jail time in these cases. All right, there's a lot more to it, but this isn't an animal law, criminal law class, so we're not going to go there right now. But, Andrew, can I ask you for a favor? Can you hit the pictures button for me on the computer? I don't think I can do it with this thing. So anything in A is class 1 misdemeanor. And then we have B, and I'll get to B in a minute. But B is kind of the ones where you have a prior conviction of something. This is what I wanted to show you. We have a Purina dog chart in animal cases, and it's anything from 1 to 5, all right? We also have a Tufts Purina, or the Tufts chart that's 1 to 9. But I started my career, and I'm getting older now, which you know from the beginning of your career is what you stick with. And so Purina is my body chart. That dog is below a 1. A 1 on Purina body chart means that dog has been starved to an inch of its life, basically.
And what I tell people about these cases is it's really hard because the people don't think they've done anything wrong. They really don't. They think that I'm just being a big old bad prosecutor. And we like being big old bad prosecutors, don't we, girls? But they really don't think that anything they did was wrong. I had a lady who wouldn't even plead in Halifax until the 11th hour, and then she fled. But she was basically mad because they weren't her responsibility. And every day she walked out, and that dog was tethered. She fed the other ones, but that one, she starved it to 1.8% of body mass. That's unconscionable to me. And someone who would do that, I guess, is ignorant, but shows a callous disregard for life of any sort. For me, that's a problem. So I'm not trying to gross you out with the pictures, but I want you to understand what an animal abuse prosecutor does every day and why you should care about it for the dog's sake. But you also need to care about it because they do move on to humans. This is a dog fighting dog. You know, as we know, that dog, his ears are cropped. That's what they've done to it. Because they don't want the other dog latching onto its ear in a dog fight. Dog fighting, an average dog fight takes 3 hours. Did you know that? And the interesting thing about, I guess, the Michael Vick case is that people care because he's very, very, very famous. But it was going on a long time before Michael Vick. And the things he did were really endemic of what dog fighting is about. They do electrocute them. I've had to watch a lot of videos where they take a live wire and they kill the dog. Now, if you don't think that they would kill you or they would hurt someone if they're going to do that to a dog, you're sadly mistaken, right? Because someone who can do that to an animal without any pity, without any regard for the animal's life, no matter how much that dog fought in the ring for them and never turned on them, that's not someone who is really fit for human society. So, these are more dog fighting dogs, and I should get back to the referrer. Okay. Can you put it back to the slide? I'll talk a little bit about dog fighting. This isn't about dog fighting, but I'll give you a little overview of what the dog fighting law is, just because that's what a lot of people want to know about. A is a misdemeanor. B is pretty much a prior. If you have a prior conviction for cruelty, I get a felony. It used to be more important when, thank you, you're so good to me. It used to be more important when we didn't have felony cruelty because prosecutors, you know, I gotta tell you, I had this one dog who someone had thrown acid in its face. And it was a German Shepherd. And it was the sweetest German Shepherd you ever saw. And the vet saved him. And I said to the vet, "Are you kidding me? Why didn't you euthanize him? That's not fair to him." That dog was so sweet. And he lived 2 more years and he was blind. But he had a great life. The people who loved him and who gave him love. But because she saved him, I only had a misdemeanor and not a felony. Intentional crimes are very hard to prove, and you basically need a witness. I've only had one dog fighting case where I had someone who came who had been at the dog fight. He turned in the person who was willing to testify. And for his good testimony, he got threatened by the person. So it's very, very hard to prove intentional crimes. If you have anything in B, you have a prior, which is very rare. I've only had one case where I had a prior conviction of cruelty. I have a class six felony. Anybody know what a class six felony is? Tell me, Patricia. Come on. I put it on the spot. Up to 5 years in prison. So I get anything from 1 day up to 5 years. So anything in B, I have to have a prior. And then we have felony cruelty. And that case I told you about where that guy starved the chihuahua, that was kind of a seminal case for us because until that point, I used to basically teach that if you had felony, you had to have an intentional cruelty. And what we figured out is if a vet is willing to say it's inhumane, then I have a felony. And in that case, they were willing to do that. And because of that, we got a felony on the guy. But you'll see that it mirrors A in many ways, but it adds some things. So for instance, if you have a snake, and you're my boyfriend, and you love that snake, and I'm mad because you're spending too much time with that snake, and you expose that snake, or you bludgeon that snake to death, I only have a what? And this is, if you kill a wallaby, I only have a misdemeanor. I only have a felony on a dog or a cat. That is a companion animal. So it's kind of debatable that if you had a feral cat, whether if you killed it, I could get you for a felony, but I'll tell you that I can get you for a felony. I can pretty much make the case for anything. But here's the bottom line. If you have a dog or cat, that's how I have it gone. And I have to prove that you tortures, willfully inflict inhumane injury, you unnecessarily beat, maim, or mutilate the dog. Under the first clause, I didn't go through every little part, but it says unnecessarily kill. So we had a case in Morocco where the guy said he was afraid of the dog. It was a little, those border collies, really cute little border collies. He was like about a year old. He was in fear of that dog. He was so much in fear that he went back in the house, got his gun. The dog had run off. Gets in his car, and he drives down the dog. And then he shoots the dog. Do you think that's against the law in Virginia? Yes, it is. You can't just do whatever you want. You can't just shoot a dog. Can't do what you can. Now, there are certain exemptions and certain defenses. If I had a judge ask me, well, can I shoot a rabid dog? Last time, 2 weeks ago. Well, yeah, I guess you could if it's charging at you, but it's debatable if it's running away, whether you can just shoot it, okay? I would say to you that under the law, that you could be prosecuted. So try not to be shooting it, rabid dogs, okay? All right, so anything, this is a felony, and it's up to a class 6 felony, so it's up to 5 years in prison. It's very hard. I run the numbers every year to figure out what we're getting average in Virginia. And we're getting anything from a day to 6 months to a year. But the average is about 6 months. But really, if you really look at those numbers, I tell you that it's hard for me to get even 2 months in jail, or 30 days. I had a drowning on the Wallaby case 3 weeks ago. I got 30 days in jail. Okay, that's what I got. I asked for 30 to 60. That's what I got. So I don't want to paint a pessimistic picture because I've seen in my career a change. Big cases make changes. People take things more seriously. If you have a dogfighting case now, people are going to take it seriously, and that's a great thing, and that's a noble thing. If you have a cockfighting case, people are taking that seriously now, too. So, that's felony cruelty. Tell me when to stop talking, okay, guys? Companion animal. The reason this definition is important is because we have what's called a neglect statute in Virginia. It's adequate care. And what I like to say, people like to call me the animal rights lawyer. Not an animal rights lawyer. Because what? Animals don't have any rights. They're not their property under the law. How many of you have taken Mimi's class? Okay. So you know that. The property, right? They have protections. You have to do certain things for them. And so that's what we're going to talk about right now. Companion animal means anything that can be a companion. So can a snake be a companion?
Yes.
Not that I want a snake. Yes, they can. Can a wallaby be a companion animal? Yes. If it's exotic, if you're keeping it as a companion, then it is a companion. Exotic or native, reptile, exotic or native bird, anything that can be a companion is a companion. A feral cat is covered under here. A feral dog is covered under here. You can't just string them up and hurt them. The catch-all under the cruelty statute is important because I get to prosecute
people if they haven't done one of these things? I only have to prove one.
I have to prove veterinary treatment to stabilize a life-threatening condition. So in a case where someone hasn't provided for an animal, they haven't taken them to the vet and given them worm, a dewormer, that would be a life-threatening condition. Because if you don't treat an animal for worms, it will progressively eat them away, and it will progressively make them worse. Alleviate suffering. So you've all eaten and it's not 12. So my very first case was a maggot dog case. The woman was a middle class woman. She called animal control on July 4th and said, my dog is down, will you please euthanize it? Well, animal control, as Rob will tell you, is not there for you to take your dog to be euthanized. That's what a vet's for. Animal control allowed her to bring them in. Is there July 4th, and they're sympathetic. And they got there, they put the animal into the vehicle, the man loaded the front of the animal, and the animal control officer loaded the back. She didn't discover anything until she got to the parking lot, and she unloaded the animal. And the dog was eaten up, all up in its neck by worms. Or, I'm sorry, by maggots. In that case, I rested my whole case on alleviate suffering. Because my vet, I had, everyone loves CSI, right? Y'all watch CSI? Yeah. Okay. Well, CSI is prosecutor's worst nightmare because they expect us to have all this really groovy stuff, and we don't always have it, right? So, but I did in this case. I had the maggot vet. He knew all about maggots, the life stages, and everything. And from the size of the maggots, he got, this is my CSI moment, probably the only one I'll ever have, right, Rob? He said by the size of them, they'd been there at least 3 days, and that dog had been down for 2 weeks. So her story that the dog was running around that morning was incorrect, proved by forensic evidence. Prevent further disease transmission or progression. Same thing. The worms, whatever it is, if the dog can transmit it to other animals, then I get to prove. I only have to prove one of these to make my case under cruelty, under deprivation. Now, I think our esteemed colleague is here. Okay.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw someone that looked like a doctor. So I just okay. I'm stereotyping or profiling, right? So. Adequate feed, adequate water, adequate shelter that is properly cleaned, adequate space in the primary enclosure, and adequate exercise, adequate care, treatment, and transportation. And veterinary care when needed. These are what you have to give your dog. And if I do nothing in my talks, I want you to leave here and know what to turn in. Okay, so can you train your dog in Virginia? My intern is saying yes. Yes, unfortunately you can. There are jurisdictions that are outlawing it. Richmond has a really good ordinance. Norfolk has a pretty good ordinance. You don't have an ordinance. So a lot of times people will call poor Rob up and say, that dog, they're not treating that dog right. And they don't understand what the law is. And so let me explain that to you really quickly, and then I'm going to pass the bar to someone else. Adequate feed. Adequate feed means, and let me tell you this. Neglect is a class 4 misdemeanor, and that's basically a fine. But two General Assembly sessions ago, we elevated it. If you have a prior neglect conviction and you are currently charged with neglect, I can get up to a class 2 misdemeanor, which is up to 6 months. These are for the repeat offenders who just will not feed their dog, will not give them what they need. So adequate feed means exactly that. The best line, that's about water. A lot of times animal control will go out and the food bowl is empty. And just because your food bowl is empty doesn't mean that you haven't provided adequate feed. How am I going to prove adequate feed? How do you think I would prove it?
Spiderweb bowl.
Or feces in the bowl, or dirt in the bowl. That's showing that dog hasn't been fed. And that first dog I showed you, the body condition score is going to prove it. Because if they're a 1 or a 2, that means they're not eating, and you're not feeding them.
It has to be free of pests and excrement. It also has to be given at suitable intervals for the species, age, and condition of the animal. So adequate water, this is my best story. Well, one of my best stories. Animal control officer who I know and love went out. Water was full of feces and bugs. And the guy kept saying to her, that's perfectly good water. That's perfectly good water. Now, you see that little thing that says potable? And of course, you're all law students, so you know if it's not defined, it's the regular dictionary definition, right? Potable means human consumption. So she looked at him and she said, well, if you drink it, I won't charge you. And I'm sorry, I love that. And I would have been fine with that coming out in court, okay? Because really, if he would drink it, okay, right? He wouldn't drink it. He got charged. So the bottom line is it has to be fresh, it has to be free of pests, and it can't be frozen in the winter, right? And it has to be enough of it so that they can survive in the summer. Adequate space. I had a case once where I had a Rottweiler who should have been all of like 70, 80 pounds, and he was in a crate that was for a 30-pound dog. He weighed about 40 pounds. And that's what you're getting at here. He's in a crate. There's no shelter. There's nothing, like there's no shade over it. He's out in the hot sun. And we got him, and that dog survived. But often, animal control's called out when it's too late. And I always want to know, how come someone didn't care enough? If you hear a dog barking 24/7, there's probably something up, unless they're living outside 24/7. You know, if they're living outside 24/7, they're probably bored. They probably want some human companionship. So you can tether animals in Virginia, but that tether has to be 3 times their body length. Okay, so they can't be wrapped around a tree, which I think I have a picture of that sort. They have to be able to stand, sit, lie, bow, and make all other normal body movements. And they have to be able to interact safely with others. Adequate shelter is probably, it's the definition that keeps evolving for me. And I'll tell you why. Because in some rural jurisdictions, a blue barrel is okay. Because that's what is kind of what that jurisdiction is about. Now, it's not okay if the opening is so large that the animal can't get away from the elements and can't keep its body warm. And that's really the key. I've had my assistant state vet, you know, I've had a blue barrel, and I was like, come on, that blue barrel's not right. And she's like, but the opening is such that you could get all the elements, Michelle. And sometimes that's all they've got. Sometimes they're dead in those blue barrels. So what I'll say to you is it has to be suitable for the animal. It has to be able to let them stay clean and dry and for them to get away from the cold and the physical suffering and the heat and the cold that's out there. They can't be, a lot of times in the summer, how many times have you ever seen a dog in a hot car? Okay, I see it all the time, guys. Okay, so I encourage you to call someone and report that, especially if, you know, you can't see that the person's coming right back. Now, if it's the fall and that dog is in the car, they're probably fine, okay? But if it's 98 degrees outside, it's probably 100 and what, 8 inside?
Or more.
And so he carries around a thermometer so that he can tell you what the inside temp is. It's just like children that are left in hot cars. It's obviously a crime as well. They have to have a solid resting platform, solid surface, a floor mat. They have to be able, in puppy mill situations, what we know is that they put them in these wire bottom cages. And they live their life in these wire bottom cages. And the reason they put them in there is because they don't want to clean them. They just want to hose them off. And then they can clean, if they clean, that's how they're going to clean. So you have to have adequate shelter. Y'all don't get an intermission, I don't think. So. I'll talk about animal fighting really quickly, and then,
All right,
so animal fighting. Before Michael Vick, we had a pretty good dog fighting statute. A cock fighting was legal as long as you didn't hand the one. So if you were two boys and you threw some roosters in a cage, then you could fight all you wanted. But if you gambled on it, you had class 4 misdemeanor, or class three misdemeanor. See, this is old history now. It's all felony now. So class 3 misdemeanor, and it was a fine. And no officers would charge that because it's a fine. You know, they had it. The prosecutors are here to tell you they're overworked as it is. They have plenty of crime. People keep killing each other, people keep raping each other, it's bad. So they've got a lot to do. They're not gonna do a class 3 misdemeanor, right? Then Michael Vick hit, and we had an opportunity in Virginia to change things, and change it in a way that was fundamental and really kind of pushed the ball in the right direction, in my opinion. We outlawed everything to do with an animal fight, period. So if, you know, on Saturday night, you didn't have anything better to do, and you wanted to go to that fight, you wanted to watch these two dogs rip each other apart, well, before 2008, you could do that, no problem. I couldn't charge you. But after 2008, if you do that, you'll see here it says anything in this provision is a misdemeanor, right? But then we did this thing called enhancers in B. If there was a dog involved at all, I can charge you with a class 6 felony just for attending. If you have a juvenile involved, you're letting him kind of learn the ropes of the dog fight, and you let him undertake or attend it, I get to charge you with a class 6 felony. If you, let me get back for just a second. If your mom, and we all love our children, and you allow that dog fighting operation to be on your property, I get to charge you with a class 6 felony, and we're doing that more and more, and we're making people felons over it. Now, we don't get a lot of jail time for mom or dad, but we do charge them, and they get convicted of felonies. And they can't own guns or whatever you do when you're a felon. So, promote, prepare for, engage in, or be employed in the fighting of animals for amusement, sport, or game. That is all about the operation. And if you do that, and you go to be when an animal is possessed, owned, trained, transported, or sold with the intent that the animal engage in the exhibition of fighting, that's our paraphernalia clip. So if you have a roach clip in Virginia, marijuana roach clip, you know that's illegal, right? If you have a crack pipe, that's illegal. Well, what we did was we outlawed everything to do with the operation. If you gamble upon it, if you go in and pay a fee to go to the fight, if you do anything involved with it, we will charge you with a class 6 felony. The only thing that is a misdemeanor in Virginia now is those two boys putting two roosters in just to see what they'll do. But if they strap a gaff or a razor on the rooster's leg, or they put steroids in that dog, that's class 6 felony. So anything organized. So that's a little bit of animal fighting.
Quick question. How do you compare the state of Virginia to other states in terms of being progressive in these animal rights laws? And are we pretty middle ground, or I consider California probably is much more progressive than these types of things?
Funny you should ask that. I just got back from L.A.
Okay.
And L.A. has 28 animal abuse prosecutors. Do you think I would love to have 28 animal abuse prosecutors? I would love that. Debbie Kanaan, I hate her. I do love her, but I hate her. And they, you know, California is very progressive in many ways. I think we're pretty good. And I will tell you that I've got prosecutors here who do animal cases. And more and more what happens in the prosecutor's office is that someone really cares about animals. And they say, well, give me those cases. I want to make sure that they're handled well. And Commonwealth's attorneys are understanding because the press come. No matter what happens, the press is there. Okay?
sometimes you have as many as 6 or 7 people from the media reporting these cases. And so the way you handle them really does reflect on your prosecutor's offices. And most people love animals, and yet we're not in the minority there. I think our laws are some of the best in the country. Can they be improved? Sure. I'd always like more, you know. I'd like a felony out of the box. If you set a pit bull puppy on fire, you better believe I would love to prosecute you with a felony from the get-go. But we have to work on what we have, and they are pretty good. And I will say that I think people take them very seriously. And the really cool part is cockfighting before no one would even prosecute it because it was a class of misdemeanor. Now we're getting calls all over Virginia, people ready to prosecute cockfighting because it's worth their time now. It's a felony. But there's still an agricultural maybe bent to some jurisdictions where, you know, their father and grandfather did it and there's nothing wrong with it. So there's still, but I will say that even in my lifetime, the dogs have moved from the outside into our homes. And there's still plenty of yard dogs. I don't argue that. But most of the time, when someone has a yard dog, they're not going to tell you that straight up. It's become more politically incorrect to have a dog on a chain in your backyard. It's not to say it doesn't happen.
I just wanted to put a plug into Virginia. The Humane Society of the United States ranks Virginia 6th in the country for animal protection laws. So we think that Virginia is pretty good. And in particular, the dog fighting and cock fighting is we rank them in the top 5 in the country. They're really strong.
And when we first did this, I don't know if someone's done a better law on animal fighting, but when we first did this, I think it was like maybe it was one that you put out to everyone to do.
Oh, yeah.
So, sure, there's always problems with the law, and that's forfeiture, so we're not going to get into forfeiture. Let me go back to the pictures. Are we good? So the bottom line is, and this is what I want to leave you with, is I don't know of any animal abuse prosecutor who just does animals because we work for the government and you have to be overworked when you work for the government. So I don't care what anybody tells you, that's my story. I do 2 other things in my office. I represent the ABC board, and that's kind of the lighter part of my gig. And then I civilly commit sexually violent predators. And what we have seen with pedophiles and rapists is they do start out on animals, and then they move on to children. We had a lot of child molesters who have bestiality in their background, and they have animal cruelty in their background. And I'll leave you with this. I had a judge in a sexually violent predator case. I was trying to make my point with the psychologist, and now we have a person. And so I was going down this rap sheet, and of course I was being very dramatic, as you can see I am. And I was like, okay, so that possession of marijuana, is that antisocial, doctor? And he's like, well, yes. And he's a good friend of mine, and he knew I was coming after him, because he's a psychologist. And so the judge, and I keep going down, and it's all these things, that assault, is that antisocial, doctor? Yes. And the judge looks at me, and he goes, are you going to get to that harassing a raccoon, Miss Welch? And he has no idea that I do animal law. And I was like, oh, don't you worry. I'm going to get to that harassing raccoon charge. And then Rex Miller, who was my psychologist, who actually had a hand in Jeffrey Dahmer's case, he started sniggering at me because he knew I was going to get to the harassing raccoon charge. So the bottom line is we see a real correlation over and over again, especially in domestic violence. We had a case in Richmond, and I'm sure you guys remember it. Diana Botto prosecuted it. The little girl was kept silent. She'd been sexually molested for years, and he shot the family dog in front of her to keep her silent. So we see it over and over again, this pattern, this link between animal violence and human violence, you know, is prolific, and it continues. So, if you don't love animals for their own sake, love them because there's a human toll for it. Thank you.